Welcome to the second Bits and Bytes podcast. This is being March 2nd of 2011, and our topic today will be RPGs, or role-playing games, our feelings and thoughts about them, the future of the role-playing games, and just a kind of a fan discussion, if you will, on the subject. Today with us we have, let me introduce myself. I am Armand Kosayan over here in Los Angeles, North American editor for BNB, and I have with me today my European counterpart, Declan Burrows. Declan, would you say hi?
How's it going, guys?
And we also have today Joe Walker. Joe?
Hey, how's it going?
And finally, the newest addition to Bits and Bytes, Pascal Takaya.
Greetings.
Well, glad to have you guys all with me today to discuss probably my favorite genre of video games, role-playing games. But before we get started on that, let's just kind of discuss a couple of other things real quick, like just kind of wanted to get some feedback. What have you guys been playing this week at home? Declan?
I've been playing a lot of Killing Floor, actually. To be honest, I haven't played anything this week so far, but just recently I had this massive zombie overdose, even though I kind of hypocritically said I don't like zombie games anymore. But this is just, it's just really addictive. It's just wave after wave of zombies. You know, it's kind of like Counter-Strike with zombies, essentially. It's fine.
I'm not even sure I've heard of that one, but I'll have to look into it. Joe, how about you?
I'm still hitting Marvel vs. Capcom 3 pretty hard. I'm a huge sucker for Capcom fighting games, so I'm still on that. Otherwise, I am just impatiently waiting for the 3DS.
Sweet, sweet. And Pascal, what have you been playing this week?
I'm actually not really playing anything new. I'm kind of going back and revisiting some games that I sort of abandoned some time ago. Still trying to get through Red Dead Redemption. And also pick back up Prince of Persia.
Nice. Yeah, I have yet to play Red Dead Redemption. I'm hoping, well, I don't even know if this is going to happen, but I'd love to see it come to the PC, which is my preferred gaming system. But if and when I do pick up a console, that would be one of the first games I'll be looking at. I myself, as I was telling the guys, I've been playing the same game I play every chance I get when I don't have anything else to play, and that's Fallout 3, my fanboy obsession, love of the game. I'll never get over it. And I mean, I played on the PC, so I'm constantly adding mods to the game to keep it fresh and keep it different. But, you know, it's a very exciting game for me.
I will say that much like Fallout, Red Dead Redemption, is not, you don't so much play it as chip away at the million and a half things to do every time you pick it up.
Yeah, I've probably spent more hours on Fallout 3 than I would ever care to admit in a public forum. But, but you know, I mean, even yesterday I was playing it and, you know, I still ran across something I hadn't seen before. It was just some random, like kind of scavenger salesperson sitting on a pier somewhere fishing, and they sold me some crap. And, you know, it was just like, I'd never seen you before. That's awesome, you know, which is just part of my love of the game. Okay, moving on from that. What about what have you guys been excited about that's been going on in video game news this week? I know Joe had some thoughts on the big gaming event of the week. Joe?
The Game Developers Conference is going on right now. Nintendo President Satoru Iwata actually did the keynote address today. Talked a little bit about what Nintendo was doing. And he announced the Mario game that's going to be coming out for the 3DS. And the logo has the little tail from Super Mario Bros. 3 on there. So that's got a lot of people really excited.
Very sweet.
Me included.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know how many of you guys were around for the release of Mario 3, but that little tail meant a lot to some of us, I think. The ability for Mario to fly now was just too sweet.
Oh, it still means a lot to some of us.
Yeah, I guess that's why the excitement in adding that tail to the logo. Anything else? I think someone mentioned something about Apple and making some announcements at the convention. Nothing about Apple?
I heard they announced the iPad 2 today, but I mean, I still don't have the iPad 1, so I just saw that they announced a new one.
Right. Yeah, I guess maybe we're not the exact Apple crowd here, though we do have some Apple enthusiasts on the team that just aren't with us today. We'll let them talk about it on their own time and move on to other things. I guess let's move on to the actual topic of today's conversation, which is RPGs or role-playing games. I guess the first thing is, My experience with role-playing games and what I've seen of them is that at this point, just about every game or the majority of the games on the market have some element of RPGs in them, whether it's the leveling system or the kind of invisible dice rolling that's going in the background to determine your hit counts and so on and so forth, or just character development in general. It seems like so many games include RPG elements. What defines for you an RPG? We'll start with you, Pascal.
I will tell you that I did have to think about this one for a bit. Any answer I came up with, I agree with you, Armand. Any answer I came up with seemed to be a crossover to non-RPGs that I could think of. What I kind of came up with as what I find is the most definitive answer for me is that an RPG most at its basic level offers different sides, or I should say maybe a slice of life of the characters. You're not only participating in dungeons, not only fighting, but you're also traversing a world and interacting with villagers and other NPCs, performing side quests, buying, selling, collecting, leveling up. The other important part that goes with that would have to be the story elements, and the RPG to me is usually the heaviest on story and plot of the genres.
Joe, how about you?
I mean, I go a little more literal with it as far as the actual like role playing aspects. To me, role playing games are all about the character. It's about how they're growing, both over the, you know, the story of the game, how they're growing as a character, and then stats as well. The thing with RPGs is you can define them in so many different ways, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later. But to me, there's a lot that can make a game an RPG.
Okay, how about you, Declan? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, I think I have to agree. I mean, an RPG is essentially a really player-centric game, and it's all about your character developing. And, you know, it's rather than like an A to B progression, you know, running down a linear path, it's just more player progression, you know, very player-centric. But again, it's just really hard to define an RPG. I mean, would you call Grand Theft Auto 4 an RPG? Would you call Zelda an RPG? Even Minecraft, would you call that an RPG? I mean, it's really, it's kind of you kind of making, kind of, I would say, interacting with your world to a greater extent than other games and just kind of crafting it yourself. I mean, we've seen kind of RPGs progress from simply stats really to more elaborate storytelling devices. I mean, like Mass Effect, we've kind of just gone from these huge stories. I mean, it's just such a all-encompassing genre, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Mass Effect is practically just like a giant Hollywood space movie with thought and, you know, intelligence to it, but just so much more engrossing. That is a very impressive game, to say the least. And I know you're a particular fan of the game, Declan. I got into a whole kind of like a debate on the Kotaku forums, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, where they had announced something about the new Diablo 3 coming out, and they had been interviewing the developer of the game, and one of the guys had mentioned, you know, well, being an RPG, Diablo, blah, 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 I played the hell out of the first two Diablos back when they were when they first come out, and you know, I really enjoyed them, but I just thought of them as, you know, the genre I threw them under, I guess nonchalantly, was hack and slash, which is perhaps a subgenre of the RPG. I don't know, but I sort of, you know, just questioned like, oh, is it Diablo an RPG? I would have thought of it as something else, and I got such a massive angry response by other readers who was like, of course it's an RPG, it has these and this element, and you know, and like people would list off all their reasoning as to why Diablo was an RPG. I mean, all very valid reasons, of course, but you know, as I was like reading people's responses, and it was like all these things like, you know, you can level your character, you can build skills, you can interact with these villagers and pick up quests, and you know, you go and complete the quest and you pick up loot and blah 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 blah. And I mean, every single descriptor that I found in there could just as easily define Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, which had, you know, leveling elements and, you know, skill elements and kind of like so many RPG elements. And I mean, I'm a big fan of that game. I prefer it over GTA 4, I think, personally. But it's just at this point, an RPG is such an all-encompassing term. And to think, you know, just a couple of nerds in a basement somewhere in the 70s came up with Dungeons and Dragons as a little leaflet almost, and now it defines so many. I mean, just a multi-billion-dollar industry is defined by it. I think is very impressive. Real quick, did any of you guys ever in your younger days mess around with those tabletop games?
Like my younger days, about a week ago. Yes.
Yeah, same with me. It was one of those things that I never got into, and I wanted to give it a try. So I went out and I picked up the Red Box literally a week ago, and I've been messing with it. But it's something I think I would enjoy.
What exactly?
Are we counting Warhammer?
I'm sorry. One second, Declan. What exactly is the Red Box?
Oh, it's like the new like starter set for 4th edition. It's got like all the rules, and it's got like a little scenario for one player to kind of familiarize themselves with. You know, how your character is going to work, like how actions work, and
Fourth edition, you're referring to Dungeons and Dragons.
Right. I should have said that.
Well, everyone who's listening is in the know knows what's up. Declan, what were you saying?
We're counting Warhammer as well.
Oh, the kind of like the military.
The tabletop miniatures, yeah. I mean, I kind of collected them as a kid. But I was never really interested in the rules. I was kind of just pretending they were shooting each other and
like little action figures.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I guess Dungeons and Dragons, from what I understand, was developed sort of as a spiritual successor or from the roots of those old like kind of war-based games that you'd play on those tiles with, I don't know, Civil War or Revolutionary War, at least from an American standpoint. So, you know, perhaps Warhammer is just kind of coming full circle and just bringing it back to that, but in a fantasy sci-fi environment. So it's once again, you know, what is an RPG? It's just such a loose term at this point. It's hard to really nail, perhaps.
I mean, but, if I can add on to something you said earlier, I remember playing the first Diablo. And I'm with you. I'm on your side of the fence on this one. To me, it's more of a dungeon crawler. Or I do hack and slash. I think does sum it up quite nicely. I know the only extent that the villagers and the overworld, in other words, the non-dungeon setting of that game ever played any role to me was to have a nice large dumping ground for the loot I was picking up.
Yeah, I feel you on that for sure.
There's a couple of other things also that I kind of thought maybe define an RPG for me, but they're a little bit less important and seen in almost probably every genre nowadays. They may have kind of come from the RPG genre. For example, customizing a character, armor and weapon equipment. I know you know any action game now has some extent of that as well. But to me, to really go deep with weapons and armor, I think that that's kind of an RPG. I don't know how to say it. That's to me, that's where it would stem from, I would think.
Right. Now, I very much understand you. I even remember the there was similar to the kind of like the Warhammer and the military tabletop games. There was one that I'd sort of fool around with in my younger days. What was it? I think it was like Mech Warrior or something like that, where you had all these armor elements and you could buy various mechs and take them out onto these sort of killing fields and fight other guys. And I mean, I don't remember the details at this point, but I totally hear what you're saying. And I mean, character creation, for me anyway, is such an important part of a video game these days. I'm almost like balk at the video games where it's like, oh, it doesn't have character creation? How dare they?
It's funny for me, like playing Mass Effect and then watching my wife play it right after me, because I get so attached to like my Commander Shepard and the way I play the game that it seems wrong when somebody else is playing it. Like, no, that's not what Commander Shepard does. That's not what he says.
A quick question about that. Do you guys play male Commander Shepard or Femme Shep, as I think she's been known on the internet, Declan?
I'm totally male. You see, I don't understand that. I really don't think Femme Shep has any appeal. I mean, I think her voice acting is pretty dry, to be honest. I kind of, even though male Shepard isn't much better, there's just something about him. You know, he's just cold and... But Femme Shep is just boring.
Joe, how about you?
I'm playing male Shepard. I don't know if I would ever play Femme Shep, but my wife does, and it's actually really interesting seeing the story from that perspective. I don't know if I'd necessarily play it that way, but it is kind of really interesting to see it that way.
Pascal, did you play Mass Effect?
I did, and I went with a male Shepard. I've actually not tried, or even just to hear the voice acting, I've not tried a Femme Shep.
I guess I'm the odd one out here. I do tend to play a lot of female characters in my RPGs, and I think with the first game I may have gone with a male Shepard, and then with the second game I played a female Shepard character. And I mean, the first game was as cool as it was. I really ended up liking the second one better, and to me, it's at this point defined by my female Shepard. So it's, I mean, even when I see it, you know, I'll occasionally watch videos of other people playing the game online, and I'll see their femme Sheps with like a different hairstyle and different hair color, and I'm just like, that's not how she looks. What's going on here? it's such a strong character with so much, you know, the voice acting that Mass Effect does, you know, I mean, whatever people's opinions may be on the quality of it, it's much stronger than so many other games out there, and you have such a strong voice attached to these otherwise faceless figures that are just whatever face you happen to choose. It's kind of it can be a little strange to see someone else playing the same character with such a different face. So can totally.
Well, speaking of different Shepherds, I'm probably one of the few people that actually play with BioWare's default male Shepherd. I didn't change mine.
Wow.
One of those, eh?
I don't know. It just kind of felt like I'd seen Shepard in all the adverts and in all the trailers. And I just thought, well, that is Shepard, and I just couldn't bring myself to change him.
And I think that's actually, people have argued about the effect those commercials have had on people's choice of what kind of Shepard to play. That he has been so defined by the advertisement as a male character that I think, you know, when they first did before it came on the PC, I believe. They had some feedback or kind of stats of what people played, because I guess they record all that information now. And it was something like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, obviously, but it was something like overwhelming, like something like 80% of the people played a male Shepard as opposed to a much smaller, roughly 20% that played a female Shepard. And I have to wonder, you know, how much of that is the commercial sort of defining the character. And I think, you know, people have talked about Dragon Age 2, where the main character is now shown 98% of the time as that male character, and how much that's going to affect what kind of character people play. But I guess time will tell on that front. But we can talk about Shepherds and that stuff probably for the rest of the podcast.
The Shepherd cast, yeah.
Yeah, the Shepherd cast. What's that?
I can kind of branch off of that. Joe, you had mentioned, you know, a few minutes ago about, to put it in my own terms, the attachment that you had to your character. I mean, that's probably another staple, I would say, of RPGs is a deeper emotional attachment to the cast of characters. And and just to go back to Shepard just one more time.
Go for it.
I promise we'll leave it alone after that if you want. But I know I've gotten so my mind has gotten so attached to the notion of what my Shepard looks like that when I see a video or a commercial with the default Shepard, it takes me a moment to readjust and realize who I'm looking at. I actually don't recognize him.
Is this the same game they're talking about here? Okay, so moving on, let's talk a little bit. I mean, we've sort of been talking about our personal RPG experiences here, but how did you guys get started playing RPGs? We'll start with you, Declan.
I guess I'd played RPGs in the 90s, but my first proper RPG experience was probably when I got my kind of first proper PC back in 2003, and I ended up playing Morrowind. And basically ever since, I've been a complete, a scary Elder Scrolls fanatic. but yeah, I mean, Morrowind just gave you so much choice, and I kind of still play it, and especially the Blood Moon expansion, which is just so great. I mean, building your own colony up, and it's just such a fantastic experience having this open world and all these characters. And the thing is, one of the reasons I prefer Morrowind over Oblivion is just its crazy environment and its crazy locations and all these really amazing characters. And that's pretty much what got me into RPGs ever since. And really, anything that doesn't have that kind of level of exploration and level of customization doesn't do it for me. So,
yeah, Morrowind set a very high bar, I think, for imagination and just something very different in the RPG world. And I'm sure we can talk about that some more. But let's get the other guys' experience in real quick. Joe, what about you?
It was actually in 1997 when like my friends who had PlayStations were all getting Final Fantasy VII. And I was so caught up in the hype, like, you know, there was the commercials everywhere. They were all over all the Pepsi boxes.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't have a PlayStation. I was jealous. But I actually picked up a copy of Shining Force 2 for the Sega Genesis and played that. So, you know, I started off with the strategy RPGs. And then eventually, you know, I got my PlayStation. And I got to play Final Fantasy VII and fell in love with it. got hooked on that series. I went back and bought like a used Super Nintendo and, you know, played Chrono Trigger and all those classics. And I've just kind of been stuck on RPGs ever since.
Pascal, how about you?
I would actually have to say that the first time I really got into one of what would have to be, I'm not sure what the year, late 80s maybe, or 1990, was a little RPG on the original Game Boy known as Gargoyle's Quest. And
I remember that.
Oh, do you?
It just rang in my mind. I have to look at pictures. Go on, I'm sorry.
Well, it was one of the first games that fairly lengthy game, I guess, for cartridge-based, and that I actually played all the way through multiple times. And from there, I started to kind of hook me a little bit. I think the game that really sold me on the genre, I was just in love with RPGs, would have probably been the what we named Final Fantasy III here in the States, so the original Final Fantasy VI.
Is that the one that starts off with the mechs, or is that that's the one, right?
Yes, mechs, and
there's that epic scene where they're just kind of walking and the credits are rolling above them. Yeah, oh god, yeah, I still get my heart kind of beats faster every time I think about it.
Dude, Mode 7 technology was so cool back then. That, oh man,
look at it; it's so realistic.
I would say it's still probably within the top two or three favorite RPGs, maybe favorite games, period, for me.
It's I mean, it really is. It's a very impressive and wonderful game. My personal experience, I think, you know, I had a buddy who was, you know, his older brother was into D&D and stuff, so I was kind of familiar with that whole element, but I didn't, you know, I hardly even spoke English back then. As I was telling some of you guys, I immigrated to the States when I was maybe 5 or 6 years old, and it took me a few years to pick up on the English language. But the first real RPG I had a hands-on experience with was, I don't know if any of you guys even remember this, but back when a Nintendo Power magazine first started up, I think in their second year, they had this offer where if you signed up for a subscription, they gave you a free copy of Dragon Warrior, the first one.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And my parents got me a subscription to the magazine as a Christmas present. And so Christmas morning, you know, whatever the second year that Nintendo Power was out, I opened up my gifts and there was a copy of Nintendo Power and a copy of Dragon Warrior with its super badass cover of like some knight fighting a giant dragon, and I was just like, oh, this is gonna be so awesome. All I had was a Nintendo with like Mario and Duck Hunt, so you know, I was very excited to play Dragon Warrior. I pop it in and I just had no idea what was going on. It was, you know, I couldn't, it wasn't Mario. It had all these menus and, you know, the English language, which I was still grappling with. And it wasn't until watching my neighbor's older brother play through the game that I kind of figured out how it worked. And it took some time, but eventually I finally beat the game. And it was, you know, that was my first, I think, real RPG experience. I went on, I think Secret of Mana was the first one I really got into. On the Super Nintendo, and Chrono Trigger to a slightly lesser degree, and a number of other ones on there. Obviously, the Final Fantasy games. And then just to relate to the PlayStation's Final Fantasy VII, when that game, I remember, Joe, you were mentioning the commercials. When those commercials were airing, it was just the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life. Like, the Final Fantasy, like the vid clips that they had, you know, with like Sephiroth and Cloud fighting and all the giant machines and everything. I saved up like every like birthday, all the birthday money I had, all the Christmas money I had, all my allowance money, like whatever like crappy little after school job I had to save it up for a number of months just so I could buy a PlayStation and Final Fantasy VII and a memory card, and then essentially shun all my friends for the next 3 or 4 weeks as I did nothing but play Final Fantasy VII.
I think we could literally have a Final Fantasy VII podcast. I'm pretty sure most of us have that own personal Final Fantasy story as well. I mean, I echo a lot of what you're saying, and it was so epic. It was much more grand than I think, in my opinion, anything else that I'd seen, even for the PlayStation at the time.
I think it just redefined what video games could be. I mean, for me at that point, it was, you know, like, I remember everyone would come over. I'd have all my save slots of the really cool video scenes from the game. And, like, anytime a friend would come over, I'd be like, all right, sit down. You got to check this out because it's just too impressive. And, they, you know, everyone's jaw would just drop. My neighbor would sneak over to my house late at night after all our parents were asleep just to watch me play the game. It was that impressive for us.
That game, probably more than any other, really opened up the Western market for RPGs, because that really showed like what the genre could do, especially with, you know, the addition of full motion video. And I mean, I remember like the first time I actually got it, and I finally got it after wanting it for like a year, and I popped it in and I watched that opening sequence with like the train and then like the music blares and the logo pops up. I just remember sitting there absolutely stunned, like I couldn't move. I didn't know video games could do that. It was amazing.
Chills running down your spine.
Oh. I will actually pop that game in from time to time, you know, maybe once a year or so, just to play that opening sequence. No intention to go any further than that.
I guess we'll get to whether they should remake the game or not a little later, but since we are talking about at least what is obviously one of our favorite games, what are Declan mentioned Morrowind, which is also a wonderful, wonderful RPG, but real quick, what are some of your favorite RPGs? And we'll start with you, Pascal.
I would say Final Fantasy VI. Like I said earlier, obviously Final Fantasy VII. I also really enjoyed the, I guess more termed an action RPG, Zelda: Link to the Past. Super Nintendo, I believe it was.
That's my favorite Zelda game, hands down.
And then all the way up to now, the online MMO World of Warcraft, which, you know, also still has those RPG elements in it, at least.
It's an RPG. It's a little different, but it's an RPG.
I will say on that question also one that a game that is absolutely not on my list of favorite RPGs, and I only mention it just to generate that hate because I'm sure it's coming. For me, absolutely not on my list would have to be Dragon Age.
What? That took you a second.
Come on, man.
Defend it. Go ahead, Pascal.
as would be expected, I think. And you're not the first one that has that reaction, but I will tell you that for me, the difference was I played it on the 360, and I made the mistake of seeing the game on a PC, but not playing on a PC. So the difference in control scheme and playability to me was so great that the game just felt broken on the 360 to me after that.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't imagine playing that game on a console system. I mean, I definitely enjoyed it on the PC. It's not, you know, it's not my favorite RPG or anything, but I probably played it through two or three times. It was also, you know, one thing I gotta say about Dragon Age, it was the first RPG where I was able to play an evil character and make it all the way to the end. It's something I cannot do it. I mean, I've played Fallout 3 a million times. I can never play an evil character through the main storyline from beginning to end. I just always end up feeling bad about blowing up Megaton or something. And I can't do it. But with Dragon Age, I played an evil dwarf, like a commoner. And it really just worked. I mean, it was just so well done. And I mean, I had a wonderful time being evil in that game. And it's something I can't say about any other RPG I've played. So if nothing else, hats off to BioWare for making evil fun for a relatively good guy. But you should, I mean, if you get a chance, Pascal, you should try and play it on a PC, because I think it's a very, I like I said, I haven't played it on a console, but I think it's a very different experience at a match. Joe, what about you?
I mean, I'm a big Final Fantasy fan. 7 and 10 are probably my favorites, even though I do love the older ones. I've gone back and played all of them. Chrono Trigger is another big one. I'm probably the only person in the world that really liked Blue Dragon, which came out recently. And then as far as like more Western-style RPGs, I loved Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. I'm like you on BioWare's games. I cannot be a bad guy. Every time I would play that game and I would accidentally get dark side points, I would load my last save so I could go back. But then more recently, I've been a big fan of Mass Effect. It's a lot of game, so I've got to kind of take breaks from it here and there. I can't really power through it, but they're really a testament to how video games can tell a story.
Have you moved on to the second one yet, or are you still playing the first one?
No, I'm on the second one now. Okay. I'm probably about halfway through it, just working on the loyalty missions.
Okay. Declan, what about you? What are some of your favorites?
Well, I have to admit, I'm essentially a Final Fantasy virgin. I did have Final Fantasy X, but I got my ass handed to me by one of the Sinspawn monsters right at the start, and I just couldn't do it. But yeah, for me, it's Morrowind, it's Oblivion, Mass Effect 1, more than 2, actually. And yeah, I'm gonna have to say Dragon Age as well. Though I have to admit, I mean, I thought bits and pieces of it were pretty boring. And it's a very dull looking game, I think. It's very brown and grey. And it's kind of like Gears of War, not to bring a shooter into it, but it's just that kind of horribly dark palette. And that kind of put me off, if a colour scheme can. But yeah, but coming from Mass Effect, you see, that's the thing. Mass Effect has changed me in a weird way. It just seemed too slow, I think, Dragon Age. That's too much of that invisible dice.
It's funny you would say that, because, I mean, for me, it was almost the opposite with those two games, where I love Dragon Age's, you know, that kind of like dark gray palette is something that, for me, is just that sells me on an RPG much better than some of the more brighter or, you know, I don't want to say cheery, but, you know, the more colorful environments. I don't know why. It's just that kind of, I sometimes get the feeling that computer games or video games oversaturate the colors and make it kind of cartoony. And it really, I mean, to me, it's really, I enjoy the game. I think this game should come with a saturation slider, which I've only seen it on one or two games, but it could go so far in just making the experience better for the different tastes, because I know that's a heated debate whether people like the gray or brownish color scheme, or some people prefer the more lively or rich color scheme, and I know it makes a big difference. And another contrasting element is that I found Dragon Age to be a much more quicker game, as far as the plot and kind of the elements, than the first Mass Effect, at least. The first Mass Effect, I mean, at times, I really liked the game. I don't want to give the impression that I didn't enjoy the game, but at times I would just be bored playing it. It's just like, Christ, do I have to go through another dungeon on some epic mission that I don't really understand the eventual purpose of? And, you know, it's just, and at times I almost have to force myself through the game just to kind of see it to its end. And I've yet to been able to pick it up and play it through a second time, unlike Dragon Age, which I think I played two or three times at least, just because I enjoyed it enough to do that. Though I have not played the expansion, surprisingly.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Exact opposite spectrums from Mass Effect and Dragon Age, then, I guess.
The BioWare scale.
Yeah, and I mean, I know a lot of people complain about Fallout 3 and its greenish tint, but and you know, I know there's a mod out there that will make it more, I guess, bluer or more realistic tinted, but I love that green tint. I love how sickly and dead and, you know, nasty it makes everything look. I think it really speaks to the atmosphere of the game. But otherwise, what's that?
I was never really bothered by the tint or the color palette in that game at all.
Yeah, it seems to just be a matter of taste. You know, nothing's going to please everybody.
I mean, I'm on the complete opposite side from you. I mean, I'm usually looking for, like, these, like, you know, bright and vibrant worlds. Like, Level 5 has actually done some amazing work in RPGs. I loved what they did with Dragon Quest VIII on the PlayStation 2. I mean, that world, like, it was just so bright and colorful, and it just felt so, like, alive and engaging to me.
Yes.
Yeah, see, that stuff I can't. I've tried playing some of those newer Dragon Quest games, and they are just, they just kill it immediately for me. I just take a look at it. I'm just like, this looks like Dragon Ball. What am I doing?
even the character design I thought was pretty reminiscent of Dragon Ball and things like that.
It's the same artist, Akira Toriyama. He's been doing all the Dragon Quest games, and he did more recently Blue Dragon and Chrono Trigger way back then too.
Right, and
go ahead.
You know, I was a pretty big Dragon Ball fan in my teenage years, but now I kind of look back on it and go, what the hell was I thinking? So so it's probably just, you know, that kind of, maybe just reminds me too much of being a teenager, and I'm kind of, you know, almost, I'm edging on 30 now, so it doesn't really speak to me nowadays, perhaps. Just to kind of get my some of my favorites in, aside from the obvious Final Fantasy VII, Fallout 3, I'm a big fan of some of the older, I even wrote an article for BNB recently about it, some of the older kind of turn-based RPGs, the Baldur's Gates, the Planescape kind of games, and even just I think the Wizardry games or the Might and Magic series are all just, I mean, these are games that I had a super blast with in my younger days on the PC, and I don't know how many of you guys got to play some of those games, but they were, I mean, it's a very different experience to play something like Might and Magic, the World of Xeen kind of games, as opposed to some of these newer, much more dynamic, much more visual kind of games. This speaks to some inner nerd in me, perhaps. But Unless, does anyone else have any final thoughts on this before we move on?
There was an interesting game, as long as we're talking about the look of a game and the colors a moment ago. This was actually a series for the PS2, Xenosaga. Very futuristic, basically science fiction RPG.
On the PS2, it was a trilogy, right? But that was based off of the original one on the PS1.
There was something on the PS1. I'm not familiar with what that was. Xenogears, I think, actually.
Xenogears, yeah. That's the one I played. And it was a ridiculously long game. After about 80 hours into it and another 20 or 30 to go, I was a little beat, but forced myself through it anyway. And that was a very impressive game. I really, really enjoyed Xenogears. I tried really hard to play Xenosaga, but... Like, I remember, somewhere about 2 hours into the beginning of the first one, and I still hadn't really done anything other than watch videos. I just kind of gave up and moved on. I know what you're talking about, though. It's that original one is something I'd like to see come back. Does anyone know if it has come back on, like, the PlayStation Network or any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it actually just came back out on the PlayStation Network last week, I think.
Oh, excellent. I don't know how well it holds up nowadays, but I mean, I know back then that was a very, very neat game, and I was really impressed by it. That being a JRPG or a Japanese RPG, let's move on to the next segment here, which is Japanese RPGs versus Western RPGs. What makes them different, and what are the different philosophies of the two RPG genres? Let's start with you on Joe, with you on this one. How do you feel about the two different styles of RPG?
I grew up on Japanese RPGs, so I kind of prefer them and their style. I like both, but I mean, I'm still a big fan of the Japanese RPGs. But as far as like the difference between the two of them, I mean, I've watched many a flame war erupt between loyalists on both sides. But it seems like the big difference between the two of them is with like the Japanese, development philosophy and the Western philosophy is in the JRPGs, they tend to make you a more passive observer in the story, whereas in the Western RPGs, they want you to really make the decisions and kind of shape, the world around you. Like, how is your character going to react to this? They really put you in the driver's seat a little bit more than like a JRPG, which puts you a little bit more in the passenger seat.
Does anyone know if there is kind of like an open world, Western style JRPG out there? Nothing.
That's what I was curious to know. Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
I'm sort of surprised they haven't come up with that yet. It seems like something. I mean, the Japanese defined gaming for me for so long in my younger days, at least on the consoles. I always thought of the Japanese gaming market as the forefront, and it's almost a shame to see where it's gotten today. I'm not saying it's dead or it's suffering particularly, but it doesn't seem to be as exciting as innovative as it used to be, at least for me personally. Declan, how about you? What are your feelings on the two opposing genres?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always kind of been a Western RPG person. I mean, I've really had very little experience with JRPGs. I remember playing Vagrant Story on the PlayStation 1 a long time ago, but that just never really held me. It's always been the kind of open world games, and I think Joe has it right. I mean, you are just a passive observer in lots of these JRPGs, and I think I kind of compare them to, well, RPGs in Japan to shooters in the West, because they're such a successful formula. They kind of just get cloned. But I'm not really an authority, so I don't really know. But yeah, I mean, Western RPGs for me.
I understand what you're saying, or at least the idea behind it. Yeah, where it is so successful, and I don't know how I don't know if the JRPGs are still as successful in the East as they were in the past. It's maybe one of you guys has the answer to that. But you mentioned Vagrant Story, and that is another one that just I think was re-released on the PlayStation Network. Recently, that was a game. I tried to play that on the PlayStation, and I just had my ass handed to me every time I tried to play that game. So I never got past maybe the first couple hours of it. I don't even know what I was supposed to do. What about you, Pascal?
Well, I would say in order to answer that question, Declan, it sounds like Morrowind kind of ruined you for going back to anything that came before it. I mean, it really sounds like it just changed the RPG landscape to the point where anything older is now obsolete. And I can kind of see that point too. I mean, personally, the amount of detail and depth just in the world of a game like Morrowind, for example, it was very intimidating to me. And for you to have that as your starting game that got you into the genre, I mean, hats off to you for that.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the baby now.
It's funny, my friend Greg, who writes for another website, Tap Repeatedly, which I would also encourage people to check out, I just got him turned on to Morrowind for the first time a couple months ago, and he just downloaded a bunch of mods for it and went out and found the game and installed it, and he's just started playing Morrowind for the first time, and he's only played a handful of RPGs in the past, so it's kind of exciting to see someone experiencing Morrowind for the very first time.
Have you heard from him since?
Yeah, he made a what are the cat people in the game called?
Oh, the Khajiit.
He made one of those characters. I think kind of a stealthy, thiefy sort of character, and he's still in the first village, I think, Seda Mean or something like that. But he seems very excited about the potential and the massiveness of that game, which is such a massive, amazing game. It's and with a few mods to kind of tweak some of its weaker points, it becomes just a gold standard, I think.
I'll tell you that I do have it, I do own it, and I'm glad I bought the Game of the Year edition with every add-on expansion included, because I believe I stopped playing after the opening cutscene. I believe you get off a boat, maybe, or something.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
And after I spent the first 2 to 3 hours reading books in the first hut that I encountered, I just stopped and have not gone.
Exactly. I mean, the lore is so rich, you just get lost. I mean, I've never actually finished the Morrowind main quest.
What?
Yeah, I know. I always kind of just wander around and do like the Fighters Guild and the Imperial Cult and all that kind of stuff and the Blood Moon, Raven Rock, and it's too big almost.
There really is so much you can do in that game. I mean, I spent, I would say at least a couple hundred hours on that game. And again, it's not something I'm proud of, but it's true. And I remember when I first got it, it was the Game of the Year edition, maybe about, I don't know, like shortly, right after the Game of the Year edition came out back in the day. And this is before Oblivion and all that stuff. And I installed it and I just straight up cheated the first time and gave myself a super character and ran through the main quest just to kind of get it out of my system and say I'd done it so that I can really just float through it after that. And ever since then, it's just been really about, I just get a game started sometimes just for fun. I mean, I've got it installed right now with a bunch of mods, and I just like to get it started and just, sort of wander around and let the game take me where it will, because it's really just, I can't praise Morrowind enough. I think it's an amazing, amazing game. But we're not talking about JRPGs at all here, so let's...
The power of Morrowind.
Yeah, seriously. Let's get back on topic, I guess. I'm going to kind of skip... What's up?
I do know that I kind of started talking and sidetracked a little bit. I think one of the differences maybe here between Japanese and Western RPGs, as far as the storytelling and the story elements, I found especially since maybe the PS2 era, the Japanese RPGs that contain a lot more abstract and sometimes spiritual elements to the story.
Very true.
To the point occasionally where I've definitely lost track of the narrative. I'm not able to follow it anymore.
I hear what you're saying on that. I mean, there's definitely, even with Final Fantasy VII, it was very, I mean, there was all that stuff about, I don't remember what it was called, but that was like flowing energy that was sort of
the
like...
The life stream?
The life stream, yeah. That was all like this reincarnation kind of thing, which I thought was really cool, at least back then. I'm really curious what my feelings on the game would be if I tried to play it again now. It's hard to tell at this point. It's been so long.
Yeah, I've watched the movie, Advent Children, Final Fantasy VII. I've watched that probably 3 or 4 times. I still can't tell you what it's about.
Good point. I don't think
that movie it's just fun to watch.
That movie, yeah, it's just a visual. It's a visual feast. But aside from that, I mean, the draw to me for Final Fantasy VII was the characters, the storyline, the character development. I mean, the main character himself, for instance, Cloud, goes from being this cocky, jerky, really dislikable character to such a massive transformation by the end. I mean, at least from my perspective, it was one of the more redeeming qualities of the game. And I mean, it happens to most of the characters in the game. I think Barrett, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, goes from like almost this weird Mr. T clone to a very layered and kind of complex character. And I think, you know, that it applies to a number of the characters, and just the story development, all that were so key to Final Fantasy VII. And the movie is just, I don't even know what's going on in the movie. It's like Cloud just seems like this, your typical, you know, generic badass Japanese anime character going around beating things up. And I mean, everything's about explosions and so on, which have their place, but it didn't seem to be in the spirit of the game for me.
Well, the thing that made Cloud so interesting in the game, you know, spoiler alert, I guess, it was really cool having a main playable character that, you know, you primarily saw it through his eyes, but you couldn't really trust him, you know? Like, he would say things that were contradictory, and then when you find out that, you know, he was essentially living a different persona, like, it was a really exciting, you know, story twist.
Very much, yeah. I think it's one of the, I mean, we all know how much the whole amnesia element has been overused in video games, but I think that was a very clever way of taking something very similar to amnesia, but making it or twisting it around or making it a little different, where it's a character who maybe who doesn't remember their past, at least their true past, but has a fake past there that they've sort of superimposed on their minds, and you end up believing this character to be one person throughout almost half the game until you get to go into his mind. I think I forget how the details work, but when you do get to discover exactly who he was and how he's sort of taken one of his fellow soldiers and taken on that guy's personality. I forget what that character's name was. You know, I mean, it's such a cool thing. And now I want to go back and plug in my PlayStation and play it again.
our mission here then.
Yes, we've accomplished that part. let's move on here. This is something I'm not as familiar with, and maybe some of you guys can fill me in. The toppling of the giants, Square Enix, its current woes. From what I understand, it's had low morale lately. It's lost several of its key staff over the recent years. What are your thoughts about that Square Enix and where it's at today? And I'll let you start this off, Joe, as I imagine maybe you know more about it than some of us do.
Yeah, I mean, just from what I've like kind of picked up from different like little bits on the internet, it seems like like morale with their team is really low. You know, they don't have Hironobu Sakaguchi working for them anymore, who was the like director and producer for the first 10 or so Final Fantasies. And I was reading a lot about the development of Final Fantasy 13. I mean, which sold well and got some critical success, but just if you ask, you know, anybody on the internet, it didn't seem to really do so well. But they were working on it for so long that before they even hammered out the story, like they were designing areas and everything, and from what I've heard, Final Fantasy 13 basically had a whole game's worth of assets left over as far as areas and things like that. Wow. Which, if you ask me, that's probably what led to Final Fantasy 13 too. They've got to put a lot of stuff somewhere.
Final Fantasy 13 too?
Yeah. Well, they did Final Fantasy 10 too way back in, on the PlayStation.
Oh, yeah, they did. I never played that one.
They did, but I don't know if 10-2 was really leftover story ideas, or it was maybe just cashing in on the then popularity of Final Fantasy X by
that was a legitimate sequel that actually told like the story after very well, and it gave a lot more character development to Yuna. 13-2, I don't know, I didn't finish 13. I couldn't get through it. I got kind of bored. I got to give it another shot, but if you ask me, it's probably just they have just basically a whole other game sitting there.
Real quick, Joe, what are your thoughts on the previous Final Fantasy, the one that had kind of that live-action fighting sequence thing going on? Was that 11 or 12? I forget.
Oh, 12. I actually... Yeah, 11 was the one that was their first MMO. 12 had more of like the real-time fighting. I actually enjoyed it. They've used the setting of Ivalice in the tactics games, which I really enjoyed.
Right.
But then, I don't know, I enjoyed it. The whole thing felt to me like Shakespeare meets Star Wars meets Final Fantasy. And that was like a delicious dessert for me.
It was. And I remember I played that game and I really did enjoy it. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it, because I don't think I was looking forward to it going in. It was just, oh, it's another Final Fantasy game, may as well pick it up kind of thing. And I ended up really enjoying it. And It almost made me feel like I had to wonder, you know, am I going to be able to go back and play some of the turn-based Final Fantasy, like the menu-heavy turn-based ones like Final Fantasy VII, as easily? Because it felt, you know, especially about halfway through the game when you had enough of the macros, whatever they were calling them, and you can really kind of, you know, control your NPCs without even... I mean, by the end of the game, I just run into a battle and hardly even do anything, and I just had everyone set up so... in such a badass manner that they just tear through everything that got in their path, and it was something very fulfilling about that for me.
The overhaul of the battle system was really fun, but like what I actually found really refreshing with that game compared to other Final Fantasies is it wasn't, oh wow, we have to save the world. It was very limited in scope to like this one kingdom. Like nobody outside of that kingdom cared what these people were doing, and I thought that was actually a really refreshing take in the Final Fantasy series.
It started off with like a battle between two kingdoms, right? And then one of them sort of beats the other, and then you're representative of the losers, I think,
right?
Or something like that. What about rehashes? What do you guys feel? I know everyone talks about Final Fantasy VII being remade on a modern console and how super cool that might look. What are your thoughts on that? I don't know who wants to start off on this one.
Well, that actually a possible remake is kind of what I had thought about also previously when you were talking about the troubles of Square. My personal opinion is it seems to me that maybe lately over the last few years, Square has kind of gone from making games for gamers and for gamers' sake to perhaps just making games for the stockholders' sake is the way I would put it. I remember, you know, back in the Super Nintendo and then maybe even onto the PS1 in those days, a new Square RPG, even if it wasn't necessarily Final Fantasy, I mean, this was a big event. And now it seems to me like there's more unsuccessful or filler games. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember Dirge of Cerberus, I believe it was called, for the PS2.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
Which was I don't think I played it. I think it was a rail shooter type game.
That had Vincent as the main character, right?
Yes.
Is that one? Yeah.
And I know that there's also Final Fantasy fighting games, I think, for the PSP.
Dissidia, yeah. Dissidia Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, in my eyes, it used to be that Square could do no wrong, whereas now it's hit or miss, you know, occasionally. I mean, I do agree that Final Fantasy XII was... more successful, I thought, than maybe, or more enjoyable to me. It felt a little bit like a nice homecoming for me. But not every Square game has had that effect on me lately.
Why do we want remakes?
What was that, Declan?
Oh, go ahead. I was saying, why do we want remakes in the first place? I mean, would you guys want Final Fantasy VII remade at all, or do you want to kind of just keep the old game?
You know, personally for me, like the Final Fantasy games on the Super Nintendo, like Final Fantasy 3 or 6 or Final Fantasy 2 or whatever the Japanese counterpart for that one is, you know, like there's something about the pixel graphics that I think carry on well over the years.
Yeah.
They have an appeal, and I don't need to see Final Fantasy 3 remade in some super cool 3D graphics. I probably wouldn't mind, but I don't need it. Final Fantasy 7, on the other hand, as important as it was to my gaming history, you know, looking back at the graphics now, they kind of look a little weak and muddy and cheesy, and the characters don't have mouths, you know, in the actual game, and they're just sort of these round heads with pointy little hair and so on. The backgrounds still look pretty impressive, but the character models and the 3D models just don't look that cool anymore, and they're kind of hard to swallow. I mean, the whole PlayStation 1 graphics are kind of hard to swallow these days just because they look so outdated and just so crappy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem with 3D.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the 3D for me, I mean, there was a period where I just stopped playing video games because everything was 3D all of a sudden, and I just thought they looked horrible. You know, when 3D first came out, it didn't look that cool, and, like, pixel graphics had kind of gotten to the, you know, a very high level at a certain point, and it was really, you know, like, the games on the Super Nintendo were really cool looking for me, and the games on the PS1 weren't so much all the time. So it was, or even the computer games that were coming out in 3D that were just all about the 3D and, you know, screw gameplay or story or any of that stuff. So, I mean, I'd kind of like to see, I think, if Final Fantasy VII was remade where they just didn't really mess with the game too much and just kind of took what we have in the original version and just gave it a really nice new polish and just sort of recreated it from the ground up with brand new graphics, brand new system, and maybe even just streamlined some of the menu stuff, which, I mean, the menu was pretty cool, I think, but, you know, just a little touches, little streamlining, but otherwise kept the game sort of in its classic format. I would be pretty excited about that, I think.
I believe there was also
Final Fantasy. Go on.
I believe there was some controversy on Final Fantasy VII specifically, that the Western version, and I'm pretty sure also the European version then was shorted, whereas the Japanese version had additional content that the other ones did not get.
Oh, I was unaware of that. Does anyone know what was lost? I guess not.
I know what I've heard is lost. I've not obviously played the Japanese version, but I believe that there were alternate ending sequences depending on which optional characters you picked up through the quest. And rumor has it that the Japanese version had an optional way of reviving Eris through the quest.
No, that can't be true.
I've got to be like the know-it-all nerd here because I researched that stuff a lot back in the day. But no, like everybody wanted it and people made hoaxes, but it was never actually in the game. Final Fantasy VII did have an international version that was released in Japan because we had originally got extra content with Emerald and Ruby weapon and that, and so then they got what we got, then like a little extra like bonus sequence with Cloud and Zack and things like that.
Okay, and the whole weapon stuff, like those unbeatable weapons that, you know, only the super players were able to beat. I don't need that stuff in my game. I'm not that hardcore. I'm sorry. I like to have fun and not spend 4 hours fighting one monster.
Has anyone here beaten them?
I beat them.
You bastard.
Took forever.
Yeah, sure. Let's move on to BioWare and Bethesda, the two sort of super RPG makers here in the West. What are they bringing to the table that appeals to so many people? What is it about the BioWare games and the Bethesda games? And I know not everyone that likes one necessarily likes the games from the other. But what is it about these games that is so appealing? And I know, Declan, you've mentioned quite a bit about Morrowind already, but I'll let you you're obviously a big fan of both of these, so I'll let you just kind of get this started.
Yeah, well, I think it's a lot of it is just the huge amount of choice. I mean, that's ultimately, I think, what we were discussing is what defines the Western RPG from the Japanese RPG is this huge amount of choice and you being the central part of the game world. And it's also just the fact that the environment is so detailed, they're so engaging, and the characters are so well developed. And I mean, of course, in Japanese RPGs they're well developed as well. But I'm speaking from my only Western perspective, and it's just the huge sprawling stories and the fact that you're the one changing everything. I think that's the most appealing part.
Yeah, Joe, what about you? How much? How do you feel about the Bethesda and BioWare and their more recent RPGs?
It actually took me a little while to warm up to them, but I mean, I've enjoyed them. I mean, because I was, you know, stuck in my ways, like, oh, that's not an RPG. They're not taking turns when they're hitting each other. I've come to enjoy them. I think a lot of the appeal with them in Western audiences is that Western players don't like being told what to do. So I think that they really appreciate the just the freedom and openness of you know, BioWare and Bethesda's offerings.
How about you, Pascal?
I second that, and I also want to add to that just by having all this extra freedom of choice, that it lets you tailor the game to your, maybe we could say like your age level. I know many adults probably appreciate the fact that they can go into different situations. I don't want to call them adult situations because it's not that type of game. But just, for example, to bring up a game, the Fable games really let you
go on.
Was there some objection?
Declan was just making an sound, but otherwise, I haven't had the pleasure of playing the Fable game, so go on.
Well, just that the amount of choice was more than just do I want to go in the dungeon and save the princess, or do I want to go do something else? The amount of choice also, I think in many of these games now, especially, lets you influence other things and really just craft your own game much further than just which quest do you want to take on. But you get to kind of create a little semi-life for the character.
Yeah, and I totally hear you. I mean, that, you know, as I've said already with my man boy love of Fallout 3, it's the fact that I can, yeah, like I can step out of the vault in the beginning of Fallout and pretty much just go and do whatever I want after that. Like, there is no, you know, I can go look for my daddy if I want to, but that's rarely my priority when I'm playing the game. And I usually just, I mean, I just love going out and exploring the game. And with like the 5 or so DLC downloadable content that Bethesda released for Fallout 3, it's such an unbelievably expansive world and such a very detailed one. And, you know, like I said, I've played the game for more hours than I would ever want to admit. And I still run across things I haven't seen. I still get new experiences, and even missions or quests or whatever that have played out before can develop in different ways just because of the sort of the dynamic elements that are there. And that's sort of something that I always that I felt were lacking in Japanese RPGs, and that, you know, the only dynamic element was how soon I was going to get into a random encounter instead of, you know, like, it's like, oh, well, here's the same dungeon I'm running through, it's going to be the exact same plot points, and then I'm going to have some random encounters and I'm probably going to get through, and then it's going to be the exact same story development. Whereas in a game like, from, you know, like these Bethesda and BioWare games, you do have some degree of choice. You know, you can be the bad guy, you can be the good guy, you can be the weird neutral middle guy, I guess. I would like to see a little more options for character personality types. I'm kind of getting a little bored with just, you know, good guy, bad guy, in-betweener, you know, as the options. I'd like to see more of, you know, like the serious character, the more jokester character, the more maybe, you know, just something just to kind of add more dynamism to the game. And I think I'd like to believe that's going to be coming pretty soon. But
yeah, I think I really hope the same as well, because in, certainly in the Elder Scrolls games, I mean, your character is basically a blank slate and you can't really do much. It's basically be angry or be, you know, be nice. And in Mass Effect as well, I mean, the choices are always really, really clear. It's nice, neutral, asshole. So it's too black and white, like Fable as well, I think. Especially Fable 3. I mean, the choices are basically be totally horrible or be really nice. But then being totally horrible means your kingdom is saved, and being really nice means your kingdom is totally destroyed. Spoilers, by the way. But it's just... It's just there. Yeah, I mean, that's probably one of the things that's majorly lacking from Western RPGs, is just not being able to develop your character enough.
Yeah, you know, I heard that same complaint in a review. It may have been Yahtzee's review over at The Escapist. I'm not sure, but it was, yeah, basically, maybe it could have been someone else. I don't know. But basically saying, yeah, if you tried to play the good guy in Fable 3, it just meant your whole kingdom was destroyed.
Yeah.
That seems kind of underhanded to me. It doesn't represent real choice. It represents, you know, it's almost like tricking the player for trying to be a good guy, which I haven't played the game, so I don't really know, but it didn't seem like something that would appeal to me particularly.
Play the game however you want, but do it only this way.
Yeah.
Sure, there should be a chance of success regardless of what your actions and your choices were.
Yeah, I think the reviewer I was reading was saying something about how he would have liked to have the ability to have sort of been a little more tight-fisted and kind of dictatorial in the beginning of the game until he saved his kingdom and then used the massive wealth and so on to be the good guy. And that wasn't really an option, which, you know, in real life, potentially, I guess it could be an option. Not that we see it very often. We're probably running kind of low on time here, so let's move on a little bit. And just for a short period here, talk about the future of the genre. I've sort of hinted at what I'd like to see in some of the, at least the Western RPGs, with some more character customization as far as their personality goes. I feel like BioWare sort of has touched upon this with, you know, like in the Mass Effect games, you can define elements of your Shepard's past, but they're only mentioned maybe a handful of times in the game, and it doesn't really affect the character as much as I'd like to see. But what are some of the things you guys would like to see in the future of RPGs? Like, how would you like to see them advance? And I know Skyrim is a very large and exciting RPG coming out that maybe we can touch upon while we're talking about this. you don't even want to know how excited I got about Skyrim when I saw the pictures and read about it. It's, you know, my expectations are a little too high, perhaps. But let's start with you, Pascal. What would you like to see in the future of RPGs?
I mean, obviously, we have talked a lot about customization. As far as like the future, I mean, one thing that I don't want to see is that customization takes over the emotional impact that the game innately has on you, as we also talked about earlier. I mean, I can, as far as the, like the look of a character, I can certainly, you know, the character builders get a lot more in depth constantly, and I can certainly build a character and spend a lot of time on it, only to not see it on screen very much or to have it covered up by armor later. You know, I definitely want to. I would caution the emotional impact for me is still the probably one of the first and most important things there. And then as far as the also with the customization of the game, the gameplay experience and that open world feel that is kind of common now in like games like Fallout and things like that. But the pacing then becomes a slight issue. I mean, not, I would think not everybody has hundreds of hours to be able to put into that game or games like that. And I'll cite World of Warcraft as an example. I mean, there is an actual story in that MMORPG.
No. Sorry, go on.
There seems to be a lore there, but I know my own personal experience is that the story itself gets lost in the myriad of things that need to be done just to keep up with the game itself. So it's maybe just, you know, the two things that I would be a little bit concerned about as the customization and open world aspect continues to grow.
Okay, and Joe, how about you? What would you, and maybe you being the JRPG expert here, what would you like to see maybe in that field that might help revitalize that market a little more in the West?
I think they need to stop trying to develop JRPGs that will appeal to both mainstream audiences, because it's not going to work. I think that they should just continue developing JRPGs with JRPG sensibilities in mind and market them accordingly. Because, I mean, you're never going to make a net big enough to catch everybody. You know, people like JRPGs because they're JRPGs. And, I mean, when you try to cater to, you know, both the Japanese and the Western mainstream audiences, you just wind up alienating more people than you're appealing to. So, I mean, I like traditional JRPGs. They're familiar. They're fun. But, I mean, at the same time, I do still really enjoy the direction that Western RPGs are taking. And I'm really excited to see more things like they're doing with Mass Effect, where, you know, it's a series where the choices that you're making in one game are going to completely change, you know, the story in the next one.
Yeah, I'm still planning on, I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm still planning on playing through the first two again just so I can save my character and be ready for Mass Effect 3 when it comes out. We'll see if that actually happens. Playing through the first one again is going to be a bit of a chore, but we'll see how well that plays out. Declan, final thoughts on the future of RPGs?
Well, I would say for open world games particularly, I think more direction and more urgency in the main quests and the main storylines. Because I thought Mass Effect 2 was pretty much just one long, massive fetch quest. And in Oblivion, for example, that means Cyrodiil was being attacked by demons, but no one really cared until you kind of talked to a certain guy at a certain place. I just think that despite these massive stories, they're not being treated properly, I don't think. That and Holodex is pretty much it.
Yeah, and I hear you on the, what you're saying about Oblivion. I very much like the game, and I think I prefer the expansion pack a little over the base game. But the storyline in Oblivion was sadly a little stunted in some ways. And I'm hoping – I mean, I think Bethesda has shown what they could do with storytelling in Fallout 3, and I'm hoping that carries on. And I think even with the DLC for Fallout 3 was very – like The Pit, for instance, really – the story there really was exciting and dynamic for me, and I'm hoping they're going to carry that on into Skyrim. But we will have to wait till – when does that come out, November?
11th November.
Oh, man. Let's just hope they don't push that back, huh? I don't think my little heart can handle it.
Be strong, guys.
I'm taking the week off.
Oh, yeah, to say the least. my friends are going to forget I exist for a while. Well, I think this has been a very fun discussion. I'm glad to have all of you guys here with your thoughts on RPGs on our second Bits and Bytes or BNB podcast. Thank you very much for being here and discussing all this. And, if you listeners want to comment or add in your thoughts, we'll have a comment section below wherever this is posted, and we'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much, guys.